Blinds.com Cyber Monday sales event is happening now. Get some of the best deals of the season with up to 50% off site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Avoid the home renovation overwhelm. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings delivers big results, and Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Skip the long lines or waiting around at home all day just to get a quote. With Blinds.com, shopping online doesn't mean sacrificing quality, style, or service. A Blinds.com design expert can help you make the perfect selection. We can even handle everything from measure to install. Get your whole home installed for one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Shop Blinds.com Cyber Monday sales event today for some of the best deals of the season. Save up to 50% site-wide, plus premium doorbusters and a free professional measure. Up to 50% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. He joins us every Monday at this time, and we certainly appreciate that. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Hope you had a great Thanksgiving with your family. It seemed and happy.
I did. It was really nice. We had the whole family in, and a lot of good food, good times.
Absolutely. I don't know. Ate too much. But other than that, it was okay. Guy, a lot going on. Obviously, we're in this transition period. What are you hearing from D.C.?
Well, a little bit of confusion. And the biggest thing that we're hearing is this time around, there's going to be a much faster move. The truth be told, when President Trump won last time, he didn't really expect to win. And it's very reminiscent of when Jimmy Carter was in office and, you know, Democrats were in a bit of malaise, and then Bill Clinton won. Well, the Clinton people will tell you they were running against George Bush, very popular, did not expect to win. They were setting up for the following 4 years, and they won. And so there was a lot of turmoil. You had the Travelgate issues and some other odd things with Clinton. Well, the first Trump administration was the same way. None of the polls showed him winning. You remember Hillary was going to win easily. Everyone thought about it. They were measuring curtains, you know, setting up protocols. And people were shocked. I mean, it was genuinely a shock. So there was a real slowdown. This time around, they expected to win, they planned to win, and the appointments are going very fast. And so, you know, the cabinet is going to be ready. You know, we really, it's too early to tell what the actual policies will be, because you campaign on broad strokes, and then when you get to legislation and to policy, you have to compromise. There's a thin majority on the House side, so we're going to have to wait and see. And then there was an interesting commentary on Matt Gaetz, which was that it was a strategy to get him, A, out of the House, and B, not to be confirmed. So he resigned from the House, and the people in the House are very happy to not have him there because he was a firebrand and a troublemaker. And then the senator said, you know, we're not going to vote for him. And so Trump got to get someone who might have blown up the House out of the way, appear to be on his side, and then have an opportunity to appoint the person he really wanted. Now, that may be too deep, and that planning may not have occurred, but long story short, it looks like he's going to be ready to push forward with his policies very quickly in the new administration.
Yeah. As it relates to, if you don't mind, let's talk about the CHIPS Act for a second. Intel's CEO resigns after struggling to turn around the chip makers, reported in the Wall Street Journal this morning. That's an interesting happenstance.
It really is, and it's indicative of the fact that the U.S. government has essentially zero ability to pick winners and losers. Almost you should bet on the opposite. When the government decides, okay, this is the way to go, they're usually wrong. And I mean, it goes all the way back to the dawn of aviation when Wilbur and Orville Wright were making an airplane in their bicycle factory. The U.S. government funded Langley, who was running the Smithsonian, to develop airplanes, spent lots of money, and his airplane never flew. And in the meantime, Orville and Wilbur did something in their bicycle shop that changed the world. So the government, even then, couldn't pick winners and losers. In World War II, it started the war with very inferior equipment, had to ramp up very quickly. And as you look forward to the CHIPS Act and also to the Inflation Reduction Act, when the government is picking places to invest, it almost always gets it wrong. Somebody well said that the viability of a project is inversely proportional to the amount of the government subsidy required. Meaning if it requires a lot of government subsidy to make it work, it just may not be economically viable.
Yeah. Intel is going to be the recipient of a $7.9 billion award under the for a chip plant construction project by the government. And also they've got some defense contracts that are guaranteed to them. And earlier this year they announced that they were going to lay off 15,000 employees. And cut $10 billion in costs for next year. So it's emblematic of what you just outlined.
Yeah, it's just hard for the government to pick the right companies. The government would never have invested in Tesla or SpaceX. And, you know, they both worked. And the government has invested a lot of money in, you know, EV battery plants, startups that really haven't succeeded very well. So I would suggest better for the government to step out of the way and create an environment for a lot of competition and then see, you know, sort of let the best business win.
So let's pivot. Let's talk about why your flying experience is so different today. What's that about, Guy?
Well, there's been a big change. You know, Warren Buffett once was asked about the aviation business. He said, on behalf of investors, if investors knew what the airlines would do to the investing public, they should have shot Orville and Wilbur down.
That's pretty strong.
Now, yeah, but the point he was making is essentially every major airline has gone broke. Some of them went away completely. So you have airlines like Braniff, Pan Am that are nowhere to be found. Even airlines that are wonderful, like Delta, actually went bankrupt and had to file Chapter 11 bankruptcy. So the airline industry is incredibly competitive. In the 70s, you got deregulation, so you had a lot of startup competitors like Southwest. But the airline industry has endured a lot of crises, the oil crisis, 9/11, COVID. And as a result of that, we've ended up with big mergers. Northwest merged with Delta, American with U.S. Air, and United with Continental. And we ended up with a big three. Well, what the big three discovered, and Delta is leading the pack, they discovered that the way they were running the business just wasn't working. And if you think back maybe 15 years ago, the front of the plane had first-class seats and very few of them. And only 12% of those seats were actually sold at full fare. The back of the seat, back of the plane was, cabin class or whatever. And the airlines discovered, led by Delta, that if they reconfigured the plane, people would actually pay a lot more. And so now you have Delta, and they cleverly renamed, they still have a few seats called first class, but they created business class because that, you know, when you're submitting your report, well, I'm flying business class, it's on business, but that's a very nice seat. They created a premium select, Delta comfort, and main cabin. And what Delta discovered is the flying public would pay more to have more space. So in the back, in the main cabin, they shrunk the distance between seats by an inch. But Delta Comfort increased them by an inch. Delta Premium Select increased them further, and then Delta Business Class increased them further. And what they found is when they changed the pricing, suddenly 75% of the people flying in those different levels were paying for the seats. So they were selling more seats, people were paying for them, compared to just 12% when they had the old very high first class prices. So it was counterintuitive. They actually reduced the price of first class, sliced and diced it, and then sold a lot more tickets. So Delta is now discovering that people will pay for that. And I know I fall in that category. If I'm flying, if I can't get a Delta Comfort seat, I'm really upset. And I think, you know, think how crazy that is. No, I'm upset that I can't pay Delta more to get essentially the same seat I would have gotten back in the old days.
I'll pay them more to let me get on the plane first or in the first group.
Oh, yeah. And
so I don't have to deal with the madness.
Well, and you've absolutely hit upon something else, because Southwest pioneered that. They had the what's called cattle call seating, but then you could pay to be in the first group. Well worth it. Delta and United paid attention. Now you can pay more on the airlines to get first boarding. You can pay more for special security. You can pay more to get to have a refund if your travel plans change. So they've sliced and diced, added different variables, and they found that the flying public is really willing to pay for those things. So if you notice, if you fly on one of the major airlines, a Delta, United, American, there are almost no empty seats. The yield management is better. They're getting paid more. Customers are upgrading because they want the extra space. And like you, they want to board sooner. They don't want to be in the last group. I saw a funny skit on one of the YouTube channels, and the person was in the last boarding group and said, okay, now we're boarding, you know, group A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And as you go by, kick the person in group H. And then, you know, at the end, it's like slap the person in group H. It's like you feel that way sometimes.
No, it's just kind of bedlam, right? You know, it's like, hey, let me get to my seat and just mind my own business, start reading my book, and call it a day.
So
I'd be much happier.
Oh, you're right. So Spirit Airlines has gone bankrupt, and it really is a bit unfortunate because Spirit had a proposed merger with JetBlue that the Justice Department said no to, and probably hurt the flying public because now Spirit has fewer options, less capital. But Spirit is now saying when they come back, and they're still flying, but when they exit bankruptcy, their game plan is to offer you Wi-Fi, snacks, drinks, or an empty middle seat, each one for a different price. So their thought is they're going to set up more options for people flying Spirit. And I sort of like the empty middle seat. That'd be sort of good to get, particularly if you're sitting in the window and the guy on the aisle actually paid for it, and you get the empty middle seat for free. But the plan is to create different options because the consuming public is willing to do it. Last year, the consumers paid over $12 billion for seat upgrades. So it's big money to the airlines, and it's changed the way you fly. It's why the planes are full and why you see these different options on the ticketing.
So let's pivot again, Guy, and talk about problems getting worse at Volkswagen. You and I talked about this last Monday. I didn't know it could get much worse, but obviously looks like things are trending in the wrong direction there.
They really are. And Volkswagen's problems go back a number of years. There are two big things that hurt Volkswagen. First was after the Arab oil crisis, Volkswagen went to diesel vehicles, and the government strongly encouraged that. They said, look, you need to do diesel vehicles. That's going to be the solution. They're more fuel efficient, and that'll help us deal with these oil price shocks. And Volkswagen said, okay, we can do that. And then the government said, okay, we also need you to eliminate 99% of the particulate matter. And Volkswagen's engineers said, you know, behind closed doors, they were telling the government, you know, we can't do both. We can't remove all the particulate matter and switch to diesel. It just, it can't work. And the government said, well, we want you to do it anyway. So Volkswagen fudged the results. They created a bypass device electronically. So when it was tested, the engine produced a lot less power and appeared to meet the standard. And that was called Dieselgate. Well, the government called Volkswagen on it. And once again, behind closed doors, Volkswagen said, well, why are you mad at us? You asked to ask us to do something that was physically impossible. We couldn't do it. And the government said, well, tough luck. They were fined. Executives lost their jobs. So fast forward. Now we have an EV mandate. And Volkswagen says, okay, well, we're going to have to do the EV mandate. We're stuck with that. And this time we're actually going to have to do it. There's no fudging the results. But before the EV mandate, Volkswagen made a deal with the devil, and the devil's calling it in. The deal was, we're going to start manufacturing cars in China. We're going to export machinery to China, precision machinery. We're going to export a lot of the things that are necessary to build vehicles, and we're going to build a big market in China and sell Volkswagens in China. And because of the big market there, because of the profits we'll make in China, we'll be able to have a very high-paid labor force in Germany. We'll never have layoffs, and we'll be able to support the company going forward. So we're going to make a premium product. We're going to sell it at a premium price. We're going to put a lot of our technology in China, and we'll go forward. Well, this is where the deal with the devil collapsed. China stole the technology, reverse-engineered the machinery, and started making cars significantly cheaper than Volkswagen. And then when the EV mandate came about, that China realized these EV vehicles are really an iPhone on wheels. So we're going to use our electronics computing ability to make electric cars cheaper, faster, and more efficiently than Volkswagen. So Volkswagen sales have collapsed in China. They're facing tremendous competition. The Chinese EVs are being exported around the world because China has excess manufacturing capacity. So they've lost an export market. They've lost a technological edge because basically China took their technology and then piggybacked after they stole it. And now they're telling their workers in Europe, said, folks, we've got to cut back. We've got to cut back our staff. We've got to cut back plants. And the labor union has said, absolutely not. And Neil, you're right. We talked about this last week. Well, this morning, just a few hours ago, strikes started in Germany. And the way the strikes work is initially you have strikes that are just 1 hour long. And that's sort of interesting. It, you know, it slows production, but it demonstrates solidarity. The one-hour strikes then become, after a few days, two-day strikes, then one-day strikes, and then ultimately, you know, the strikes like we're used to, where you just stop working and you don't go back to work. So Volkswagen is really stuck between a rock and a hard place. They can't sell their overpriced cars in China anymore because China has leapfrogged the technology. The demand for their electric vehicles in Europe is declining because Germany's economy is shrinking. Germany is the biggest economy in Europe. French economy is in trouble. So their European market's going away. In the U.S., we're not buying electric cars as fast as people thought. And Volkswagen is sitting there pondering, so wait a minute. We did what the government said this time. We didn't cheat. We focused all of our energy on electric vehicles that are very expensive, and now we're stuck without a big market. And so we have to cut costs dramatically. And, of course, the labor union is saying, no, we're not going to let you close plants. Their proposal to the workers was a 10% wage cut. So can you imagine you're going into your labor negotiations, and that's where you start?
Guy, it's interesting. You know, the definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over again in the hopes of achieving a different result. How many companies have to go to China and have this sequence and series of events, as you just articulated, happen to them? And when they come out on the back end, they're worse off than when they went in. I mean, how many times? It's like everybody believes that they're going to have something different happen, that the Chinese are not going to steal their technology, not take the best of what they have to offer, leverage it, monopolize it, move forward and compete against you. I mean, how many times have you seen this story unfold?
Yeah, and look, this is not unusual for a developing economy. Way back in the 1800s, we did this to the British. They were the leaders in textile manufacturing, and we got apprentices and people that knew manufacturing to come to the U.S., and we eventually surpassed the British and started doing it better ourselves. So it's not a surprising thing. China has taken it to a whole new level, though, and it's an actual government policy that we will steal intellectual property. You know, we don't respect copyrights, and you know, you're just out of luck. And I'll never forget, we had a company here in South Louisiana that made crawfish pots, and then they made turkey fryer pots. And they invented a way to put a drain at the bottom so you could drain out the hot grease at the end, which is always a pain because you got a lot of hot grease. It takes forever. You pour it, and then you make a mess. Well, they put this valve in, and it's hard to do because the valve has to have a nice fit. It can't leak even when it's heated because then you'd start a fire. But they did it. They got a patent. They made it work. Sent the design to China. The knockoffs arrived before the products that they had shipped and ordered from their Chinese manufacturer. And they went to a patent attorney right here in New Orleans and said, look, these knockoffs are being made across the street from our factory. They're here. And the attorney said, look, no worries. Deposit $200,000. That'll be your initial deposit. We're going to sue them, and we'll get a judgment, and we'll win for copyright infringement. He said, and then I'll get my money back. He said, oh, no, they never pay. You're not going to get any money, but you'll have the satisfaction of winning. It's like, well, I'm not very satisfied with that.
Now, that's insanity.
It is. I mean,
you can't make these things up. Yeah, oh yeah. All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. When we come back, we'll talk about Black Friday sales. The verdict's in. We'll talk about that when we return. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. Just a reminder that Medicare annual enrollment ends December 7th, and if you or someone you love needs expert advice, you can join me at People's Health Medicare Center on Thursday. We'll have experts there to answer questions and guide you through the process. You can even see a benefits presentation at 1 o'clock. Medicare is one of the most important decisions you or a loved one will make. Don't miss the deadline. Meet me over at the People's Health Medicare Center, Veterans Near Causeway, on Thursday from 10 to 1. We'll be broadcasting live from there. We're back with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, let's talk about Black Friday sales, some hits and some misses.
Yeah, it was an interesting year. As much as you want to follow people that are leaders, you should follow Warren Buffett in investing and Taylor Swift in merchandising. So Taylor Swift came out with her own book, and she published it herself. And usually when you have a self-published book, that means that nobody would buy it. Well, obviously, any major publisher would love to have a Taylor Swift book. But what Taylor Swift knew is that if a publisher published the book, she'd get a royalty of about 15%. And she preferred to get all the money. And so what she did is published it herself, made a deal with Target to buy 2 million copies. So she makes the profit. Target guarantees that they're going to buy 2 million, and Target offered that on Black Friday. And it was a spectacular hit for Taylor Swift and a pretty good hit for Target, which was really lagging Walmart significantly. It did push Target volume up and foot traffic. It wasn't the runaway success that they'd hoped. They sold most of the books. They didn't sell out by any means. And I think part of the reason is the book's available on Amazon today, so you could order it online. But it was a good move for Target, but it was a spectacular move for Taylor Swift because it just shows her significant skill in marketing, because she was able to capture the book company's profits and put them in her pocket. The other thing, good for her. She's a good businesswoman and has become the most successful female entertainer in terms of profitability ever in the history of the world. The other thing that was a surprise, and if I were a buyer, I wouldn't have seen this one coming. The other big sale, Bibles. Bible sales were up 28% compared to last year. Regular books, everything else except Taylor Swift and Bibles, 1%. So an interesting switch, something that people didn't see coming, and a lot of folks are trying to explain why, and I'm one of them. I'm not sure why, but it's a good thing. I hope people will read it and pay attention. But we're not sure why those sales were up. The tough news for retailers, though, was that foot traffic wasn't really that high. There were no must-have items, and, you know, there were a few places where folks lined up, but there was nothing that people had to have, and sales were really about 1 to 1.5% higher in most places than last year. So pretty calm in most of the retailing stores. And, you know, I remember in years past when our children were little, the kindergarten teacher asked my son, well, what do you want? And 3 days before Christmas, we got this little note home. Oh, we ask all the kids what they want. Your son wanted a transformer. And I looked at my wife. I said, what is a transformer? So I don't have any idea. So I asked someone at work, what's a transformer? No, what he said to me is, you're in deep trouble. I said, why am I in deep trouble? I said, because that is the hottest toy ever. They're sold out everywhere. Well, thank goodness I went to a place, ain't there no more, K&B, and got a transformer. But there were no toys like that this year. Toy sales were okay. Appliance sales were okay. No really hot items. But on online sales, you know, this is Monday, online sales were up 9%. On Friday. Yeah, so it's showing that transition. People are continuing to shop more online, and that's very tough for local retailers. And I do encourage folks, you know, if you're going to shop, if you want to have local stores and places to try on, for goodness sake, shop locally, preferably with a locally owned company, because we have a lot of companies in New Orleans that sell stuff that's made here, designed here. It's more fun to give something that's local and creative than something that's national that, you know, everybody has. So I hope we can get listeners to sort of buck the trend and go into some of the local stores, because it really is what makes a city interesting and different. And we have a lot of good local products. But nationally, the trend is away from retail shopping at local stores.
Absolutely. Guy, so overall, it looks like kind of mixed results then for Black Friday. And you know, I know a lot of economists kind of look at Black Friday and what do they call them today, the Monday afterwards, to kind of get a trend or a feeling for if something's trending, right?
Yeah, Cyber Monday is what they call today, because usually people go back to work and instead of doing their work, they're shopping online, which is okay. I mean, everybody does that a certain amount. But the Cyber Monday extended into the past week. And as I say, this year, there weren't really any hot trends. The Apple iPods are selling pretty well. But there's not a new Apple phone that everybody needs to get. There's not an electronic device. The Bibles were definitely a shock. You know, not surprised that the Taylor Swift books were selling. Non-electronic toys were a bit above expectation, and that's another good thing. It's like I think people are getting a little tired of their kids on screens. So seeing a little better sales of toys, either toys and games that didn't have a battery and weren't an electronic screen. But we're not seeing much excitement this year in terms of new products or things that people must have. So for retailing, it's okay. And the original definition of Black Friday is when merchants went into the black and became profitable. Now, that's That's really not true. Most merchants are profitable after the first quarter, but that's where the euphemism and the name Black Friday came from, is the profitability that occurred with the big sales after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how much this carries through. So, Guy, you and I are going to be together Wednesday. Your auctions in August, we auctioned off lunch with you and I. We're going to be at Pigeon's Catering and Events private tasting room on Jeff Highway. I don't know if you saw the menu, but we're going to have a trio of soups: New Orleans gumbo, sweet potato and andouille bisque, corn and crab soup. Then we're going to have smoked mushroom and ricotta ravioli, buttered ricotta, filled ravioli, smoked portobello, button mushrooms, chives, chili flakes, shiitake chips, and a light creamy sauce. Man, am I hungry. Rosemary crusted beef tenderloin, a chicken breast stuffed with artichoke, eggplant, and spinach with lemon beurre blanc sauce, seasonal grilled and roasted vegetables, and then to top it off, bananas Foster. So I don't know what diet you're on, Guy, but you're off of it on Wednesday.
And on Wednesday, I'll definitely. I'm glad I have a few days to recover from Thanksgiving, and actually glad my annual physical at Oshner's tomorrow. So none of that will show up.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow,
right there,
the Pigeon. Look forward to on Wednesday.
Yeah, great friends at Pigeon's Catering and Events, private tasting room, a great place to hold an event as well. All right, we got to get to a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Russian economy stumbling. We'll be right back with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, bad news as it relates to the Russian economy. What's going on there?
Yeah, it really is. You know, last week we talked about why be glad we're here. Be glad you're not in Russia. 144 million Russians total. The population is shrinking every year. And the population of working age folks goes down by a million every year. And that's not counting the ones that they're killing in this senseless war in Ukraine. The Russian ruble is the weakest it's been in since the invasion. You know, we talk about the Fed cutting interest rates. Their Fed has raised their benchmark rate to 21%.
Wow.
Their inflation is above 9% and climbing. And, you know, we talked about shoplifting where, you know, the Walgreens are locking up the razor blades. In Russia, they're locking up the dairy case because people are stealing butter. Mortgage rates. Once again, we talk about slow mortgage rate. Their mortgage rate is 30%, 30. A mortgage broker who didn't want to be identified, because you can't say negative things in public in Russia, said the market's dead. Nobody's buying anything. I mean, people can't afford it. The rates are too high. People are uncertain about the future. So tremendous financial challenge. GDP grew last year. But it grew only because the World Bank counted manufacturing of things like tanks that are being sent to Ukraine and blown up. So, yeah, you built stuff, and then you got it blown up when you tried to send it across the border in Ukraine. This year, it looks like their economy is going to grow by less than 0.5% and probably shrink. Because independent analysis that uses satellites to track freight movements said railroad movements are actually 9% lower than they were a year ago. So anything you make, you have to ship by either truck or train. So that's an indication that their economy is slowing. And the challenge that they have is a lot of skilled Russians have left the country because the young people don't want to be drafted. They're killing off a lot of people. Some estimates are as high as 1,500 a day in this war. And they're paying bounties to the families for people to join the war effort. Well, that's pushing up inflation and causing a budget deficit. So really a horrible situation, and that's not even talking about their relationship with China and the way the Chinese are taking advantage of their problems.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of interesting, too. I think you probably have been following what's going on in Syria, right, with the bombings and the activity in Aleppo. the Russian government has really kind of worked on behalf of the Assad regime and creating stability up there. But when the Islamic groups started doing what they're doing in Aleppo, they left, which was kind of was telling because they've been the mainstay in that area of Syria for a long time. Your thoughts?
Yeah, Syria is a big mess. You have the northeast controlled by the Kurds, the north controlled by Turkey, the southeast a little U.S. presence, and the west by the Assad regime. Assad has been propped up by Iran and Russia. Both of them are distracted. Iran has been taking hits because of the Middle East war, and Russia obviously has been taking tremendous hits because of the war in Ukraine. So Russia is trying to use air power to deter the rebels, but they really don't have an excess supply of planes or missiles. So Turkey, which is backing the militants, is saying this is a great time for y'all to push forward. And they've conquered Aleppo, which is the second biggest city, and the Syrian army just melted away. So do they come back? I don't know, but I think certainly Russia's weakness, Iran's weakness, precipitated this and is one of the reasons that the rebels have moved forward in Syria. So it is a global economy. Things are connected, and Russia's paying the price around the world for invading a sovereign country. They're also stuck. Now they're exporting oil to China, which is saying, you know, we need to renegotiate the price even lower. And China is saying, we don't want to have you spending your money elsewhere. So when you sell oil to us, we're going to pay you in yuan that are non-convertible that you have to use to buy Chinese goods. So Russia's really becoming almost a vassal state to China, and their oil, because of their having to ship oil to China because they're sanctioned elsewhere, China's using their leverage to pay less and make them accept a non-convertible yuan. So Russia really is facing economic challenges around the world.
It's going to be interesting to watch and see this unfold for sure. Guy Williams, thank you so much for joining us today. Always appreciate the time, the insight. Have a great week.
You're very welcome. Thank you. See you then.
All righty. We'll be right back, folks. We'll check in with Scoot to see what he has coming your way on Manic Monday. Stay with us. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up next, Scoot?
Well, the Saints should have won. Some people shouldn't have guns. And we will also talk about the songs that get stuck in your head. They're called earworm songs because it's like earworms. There's a new app that will help you get rid of that. So we'll talk about that, too.
It's got a great lineup coming your way, folks. Stay tuned. Scoot's up next. Hope you enjoyed today's show. We'll see you again in the morning.